People are trickling in, but it's already quarter past when we're supposed to start, so I'm going to now introduce our first speakers of the day, Michael Grigoriev, David Held, presenting FunFS. Thank you.
Hello. I guess the thing's working. All right, so you've sort of got an outline there. If you haven't seen it, it doesn't really matter because we're going to be going through it all in the presentation. Sort of to start, if this moves to the next slide when you click. Okay, so we have the origins of FunFS. And basically all this started when we were working at Net Integrations Technologies. And Net Integrations Technologies is sort of a company that has a strong open source movement. We do a lot of open source code there. One of their products here, the Net Integrator, makes strong use of open source, and we develop stuff for it that uses open source software. And basically one of the big things they do is they're all crazy about long-term R&D. We work on, you know, random future products that we might not need right now but see potential uses that other people might need, and just sort of crazy stuff that could come in handy now. One of their big things is sort of Weave Streams, which is a networking library. There's Soya as a single sign-on agent. A lot of sort of fun projects you can find, I guess, on their website. Another product that they've sort of recently come up with is Expression Desktop. And what that is sort of halfway between a thin terminal and a full-blown workstation. So basically, you've got this terminal that's got a hard drive in it, maybe not, and it's being run off of a centralized server with everything being mounted from there. Now, currently, Expression Desktop is being based off of NFS, but anyone who's used NFS will realize that perhaps is not the most optimal thing. And FunFS is sort of something that would be quite useful for that as a replacement. Finally, as far as, I guess, the Nunspace project is concerned, that's sort of, FunFS is a bit of an ambitious project, and Nunspace is sort of a crazy project. It's meant to be sort of a massively distributed, completely decentralized way of distributing information. Ideally, it would eventually replace HTTP, take over the world, all that good stuff. So FunFS is supposed to be sort of a lead into that.
Right, so to understand where FunFS comes from, we need to look at some of its predecessors. Primarily NFS. Well, the thing that you need to know about NFS is something you probably already know, is that it sucks. Well, I guess I should elaborate on that a little bit more. NFS was first introduced by Sun Microsystems in 1986. At the time, the caching was not a goal they had in mind because the world was very different then than it is today. For example, hard drives were so slow that it was oftentimes faster to read something over the network than it was to read it off local hard drive, because file servers usually had a lot of RAM, so chances were high they would have the information you're looking for cached already. So another thing that Sun tried to do is keep NFS as simple as possible, because they wanted it to be easily portable to other operating systems, etc. So they decided to use a stateless protocol. Now, this does make the client a lot simpler, but it also has some drawbacks. Particularly, security suffers. Every transaction, every packet has to be authenticated on its own. So they had to use IP-based and local security, because they couldn't very well go putting usernames and passwords in every packet. So, unfortunately, both of those means are easily defeatable. IPs can be spoofed if local security is not good, because if your client gets compromised, your server's compromised as well. And that's probably not such a good thing. Stateless protocol also means that safe caching is impossible, because you can't have the server issue change notifications or anything like that. So, not that it prevents people from trying to add caching to NFS. Unfortunately, they weren't very successful. The infamous stale file system, stale NFS file handle thing, all the locking issues that NFS has had in the past, all those are symptoms of poorly implemented caching.
And also we sort of have the poor network failure handling. Like, you know, in NFS, I'm sure a lot of you are used to trying to do something and all of a sudden it just sits there. You know, when you lose your network connection, you just block until it comes back. Now,
this might also be a good time to point out that FunFS actually does stand for Fast User Network File System and not FUNFS, like some people try to suggest. But how is FunFS different? What are its design goals?
Design goal, to boldly go where no file system has gone before. I should probably be a little more specific than that. So one of the big design goals is to have a safe, massive persistent caching. So with this, one thing we can do is full disconnected mode. And the idea behind our caching is sort of, never get rid of something that might turn out later useful. You know, you're better off having something that's out of date than having nothing at all. If you try and read a file, sure, it might be a day old or however old, depending on network disconnectedness, but something is always better than nothing. We also have sort of a sane security model as one of our goals, and also low latency. So with the sane security model, we're sort of, because we're using a stateful protocol, we can use standard session-based authentication. You know, you can use a login, a password, we can back-end to PAM, we can back-end to basically whatever you want. It's very easy to add proper security and authentication. We can use different security models like Samba. You can use a user-based security where the user has access to anything they would have had access to immediately on the machine. Or you can use sort of a share-based authentication where a user gets access to a share and has access to, you know, a set of files, whatever. And we can, you know, make sure this is secure by using setUID, the daemon setUID, to the user who's logging in to make sure they actually only do have access to what they should have access to. Or if it's for a share, we can just truth the daemon into that share so that it definitely only serves what's available there.
Right. So one of the unorthodox design decisions that was made in FunFS is that 90% of the implementation is actually in user space. There's multiple reasons to do this. One, I'm sure anybody who has any kernel experience will agree that kernel debugging is, well, not pleasant. You can't just attach GDB to it. Oftentimes you need to have a serial console, another machine. All this hassle can be avoided if you're working in user space. Also, user space implementations are a lot safer. No matter how much you debug it, it will most likely still have bugs in it. So when it does go down, you want only the daemon to go down instead of bringing down your whole kernel and your system. User space implementation is also more portable because the user space part is pretty standard compliant. It should probably compile on pretty much with very little porting on pretty much any POSIX system. And the only thing that would really need to be reworked for a different file system, for a different operating system, is the kernel module. Implementing FunFS in user space also meant that we could select the language of our choice. In our case, that's C++. I'm sure some of you will disagree, but that's what we prefer. It's also a lot easier to do massive caching when you're located in user space because you don't need to worry about a dedicated swap partition or some sort of a swap file. You can just backend to the host file system and store files there very conveniently. And the biggest thing is that we could be lazy. We could avoid a lot of duplicated code by making use of all sorts of already written and debugged libraries. Primarily, we made a lot of use of Weave Streams.
So Weave Streams is something that's developed. And it's an open source networking and general purpose library made by Net Integration Technology. And it sort of allows for rapid prototyping as the basis for all their products. One thing that's really neat in it is sort of the Weave Stream clones, which we make heavy use of in it. Now, in Weave Streams, basically everything is a stream. And what you can do is take any stream, say we have, you know, our TCP connection is a stream, and wrap it in a Weave Stream clone, just wraps the stream and adds extra functionality. So say, for instance, when we wanted to add SSL support to this, we want to encrypt the data that's going across, what we did is we took our TCP connection, wrapped it in a Weave SSL stream clone, and all of a sudden with two lines of code, or even one line of code, we have SSL encryption on our connection. In the same way, when we wanted to add gzip support to sort of compress the data for sending over a network, we do the same thing. Wrap our maybe already SSL-wrapped TCP connection in a gzip stream clone. And all of a sudden... Pardon me?
Do I
Or GZIP and then SSL. Yes, we want to do it the other way around because it's more SSL is randomizing the data and then it's more nest compressed. Yes. But either way, say we're dumb and we want to do it that way, we can do it however we want. So, but the idea is you just wrap things around things and it's really easy to do. Now, the other thing, we had a question yesterday about coroutines for one of the speakers. Weave Streams has sort of weave cont, which is continuable callback functions. So basically, you know, you call this you get the callback called. In the middle of it, you can yield and make it so the next time it's called, it continues where it left off. And FunFS is made completely with coroutines. Like the entire network file system all uses cooperative multitasking. We have one thread of execution, and, you know, threads are often considered evil and harmful. Like anyone who has used multi-threaded stuff and knows it well will admit that it's hard to do. People who don't know it well might think it's easy, but that's all the more problem for them. There's a lot of chaos that can happen. You get your deadlocks, you've got timing issues. There's all sorts of craziness that can happen. And even working on this with cooperatively multitasking and coroutines, we had a couple timing issues that we had to fix. So basically, by using coroutines and cooperative multitasking, we're essentially on a single processor machine. You know, threads are just sort of task switching and choosing what should run when, and letting the kernel take care of that. Instead, by using coroutines, we can sort of do our own task switching and say, oh, this is a good time, let's, you know, release now. When we want to, you know, send off a command, each job spins off a coroutine, which sends off the request. Then the coroutine goes to sleep, and it's awakened when the response is ready and when you can continue your operation. So you've got pretty optimized use of the resources.
Right. I guess we should talk a little bit about how we were actually able to implement FunFS in user space. We our interface to the kernel is based on the Fuse project, which stands for File System in User Space, and is developed by Miklos Shreddy. It's basically a kernel module that registers itself in the Linux virtual file system switch and bounces all the calls to user space where they can actually be handled by the FunFS daemon. There are currently modules available for Linux 2.4 and 2.6, but it should be possible to implement a Fuse equivalent with a compatible interface for any operating system with Unix-like file system semantics. So, you know, your favorite flavor of BSD, Solaris, whatever. One of the big considerations that we had to take into account when we thought about implementing FunFS in user space was performance. Of course, you gain a lot of overhead by implementing the file system in user space. You need to, for every transaction, you incur a context switch by bouncing in and out of kernel space. For a local file system, that would be unacceptable. The overhead would just be too large. But for a network file system, flexibility is a lot more important, and the overhead that you incur is often rather small compared to the network latency. So this overhead can be minimized further by making use of the kernel page cache. If you read something, you cache it in kernel space, and then next time you read it, if it's still there, then you don't even have to go to user space. The user space implementation is also potentially more CPU intensive than its kernel counterpart because you need to serialize the data. You need to in the user space you need to look it up in some sort of a hash to find all the associated data, but that's not really too much of an issue because if you're doing I/O, then your system is most likely not CPU bound, and the overhead is not that much anyway.
So another design decision we did was to use a stateful protocol. And I guess I sort of already mentioned before that we can use session-based authentication. That's obviously much more secure than using the IP-based and whatever NFS uses. The other thing that's really nice is we can do change notifications. So what we do is just sort of have the server keep track of the information that the client has outstanding, and it can notify it when it becomes invalidated. And using this, we can guarantee that as long as the client is in connected mode, that any information you see will be up to date.
Time for the demo.
All right, so our first demo is sort of a disconnected demo. What I'm going to do is just move over here. We've got a laptop that has FunFS installed on it. And the idea is we're going to try and mount sort of a root file system off of FunFS. So right there, we sort of got the Weaver, which is the product Net Integration Technology made, and we're using that as a file server. And we've installed FunFS daemon on it. And right now what he's going to do is he's sort of removing the old cache just to make sure that we've got new performance. I guess right now our persistent caching sort of gives new meaning to the words persistent caching because it lasts forever until you run out of hard drive space or remove it yourself. This is something that's sort of going to be dealt with later. It's a work in progress. But basically what he's done now is he's mounted the file system off of the Weaver, and now he's just sort of demo is a little script that's shrooding into the mounted file system. It's mounting slash temp off of the hard drive just because we currently are read-only file system. And he's now starting X off of it. So the idea here is we're going to, you know, do a bit of stuff. What's going on there? Sorry, this doesn't normally happen. Anyways, he's going to just try starting again. See if it starts this time. It's something weird is going on. Did this about 5 times last night. It worked fine. But anyways, a little bit more like it. But yeah, so what we've got now is just sort of X started off of the remote file system on the Weaver. And basically, the idea is that for disconnected mode, what we want to do is keep around anything we have to. We use lazy cache invalidation, and so we only get rid of stuff when we know there's a new version when the user tries to access it. So say, you know, you disconnect, you reconnect, you could well have all this out-of-date cache. So instead of going through checking it, that's a lot of network load. That's a lot of you might be getting rid of files that later on someone will want to take a look at. And there's no point in getting rid of it if you don't have to. So what we'll do is we'll only check it when we're connected and the server and someone tries to use it. So right now we're just sort of launching OpenOffice off of it. OpenOffice is a little bit of a stressful test. As all of you know, OpenOffice takes forever to launch even off of a local system. So launching it off of a network file system is a little bit crazy. And what we've got is sort of a funny video that we're just going to play off of the Weaver here, too. I'm not sure if any of you have seen this. It's some funny cats doing cat-like things. But basically, the idea is now that cat has crawled out of the couch and is doing things, we're just going to pull the network cable. And what we'll see is that we have our video here still playing. We've got OpenOffice open. We are not really seeing the fact that we're using a network file system. So our goal is sort of to have it that, you know, users can have network issues, can have things go wrong, and everything will still pretty much work. Now, if we were to try and go to, what you'll see is that we're still trying to reconnect. If you go back into X and try and, you know, start some new application, what we're doing is sort of having it so that anything you try and run, well, you're probably stuck in the video. Any applications you try and run, well, it's in disconnected mode. It'll just tell you transport not connected if it doesn't have a cache. If it has a cache, it'll run. So say you try to do an LS, it's not connected just because we're not connected. But yet we have, you know, this video still playing. OpenOffice is running fine. We can quit that. We can start OpenOffice again because it's been started before. And we still have the cats hanging from ceilings and doing whatever they're going to do. And what we'll see is that even, say we were to stop the video, we could restart this again. Whoa, got OpenOffice there. And if we just plug back in now, you know, we've got the video playing again, we'll see that we'll be able to access new things. So it's a pretty fancy disconnected mode. As you saw, we were playing the video for a couple seconds before we pulled the plug, yet it can play all the way through. It caches pretty well. We'll watch now. It's sort of attempting to connect. It retries occasionally. We'll see that should theoretically connect again soon, if it doesn't give up trying. Oh, there we go. We are established. So now that we're connected again, we could launch something new. Like, say you were to run Vim. You're still stuck in the graphics video. You know, we didn't start Vim before. And now it should launch off of the remote file system. And there we are.
And also we can LS.
And we can LS and see stuff that we hadn't been able to see before. Now, one of the things that we sort of concentrated on... Oh, you don't have slides. Right. Moving this back. One of the things we sort of concentrated on is the importance of latency. Now, anyone here who plays network games, I'm sure, is quite familiar with how important latency can be. And for those of you who don't play network games, well, it's important. Now, even for those of you who do play network games, you maybe aren't seeing the relevance to this situation. Because the idea is, say you have, you know, a really fast connection, a fat pipe. It doesn't matter how fat it is if it takes 5 seconds for each command to come back and forth and you're sending little packets. So the idea is we want to sort of, you know, reduce the number of round trips we have, the number of transactions that the file system has to perform.
So what can we do about latency? There's several techniques that were used in FunFS for combating latency. One is pipelining. Pipelining is basically having multiple requests outstanding at a time. As soon as you get some requests for the file system, you send them off, and the server responds to them as quickly as possible. But if you have many applications accessing the file system, you get a lot of performance increase from this technique. But if you only have one application, traditionally Unix applications are very very sequential about their I/O because all the system calls are blocking. So they'll still do a stat on something. They'll wait for that to complete, and they'll only then will they issue the next request. So we need to do some other clever things to minimize latency. For reads, it's pretty simple. You make use of the spatial locality, and you just do read ahead. So if they access some block of the file, chances are very high the next thing they're going to want to access is the next block of the file. So you just request it along with the first block, and you don't have to wait for it when it's actually being requested. But that doesn't really work for anything other than reads. So we use a latency hiding technique we like to call negative latency. It can sort of be thought about like read ahead for metadata. For example, you go to start a file. You don't know what kind of file it is. It may be a directory. It may be a regular file. It may be a symbolic link. So the transaction goes out to the server. The server does the stat. And it notices that the file is actually a symbolic link. Now, normally, the response would be sent back to the client, and chances are very high. The next thing the client would do is actually issue a read link call to find out where that symbolic link points to. But what we have our server do is predict what the client is going to do next, and actually send the read link result along with the result of the stat. So by the time the client gets the response, the most likely response to its next query is already there. It's sort of like branch prediction in some ways. So now we'll try to do another demo involving a real-time latency benchmark over the internet. I think we've got internet, right?
What we've got here is sort of just I mounted NFFs off of a machine, just sort of user local. And what I should be in here is user local include. And we're just going to do a find here, sort of watch how long it takes to go through. We can sort of see this is NFS off of it. In the meantime, that takes about 6 seconds. So this is a lot faster than it was taking at home. We've got 100 milliseconds ping versus at home we were taking 300 milliseconds. To 5 minutes. We're just basically timing the find, and my laptop's being funny, and it's taking, you know, about 5 seconds, 6 seconds. And now what I'll do is just mount it off of FunFS.
Right. So NFS, we did it twice. Both times took about the same time, 5 seconds, because well, NFS does not do any caching. We actually already have some pre-made results for these tests so that we don't waste time doing all of them here. I guess I can't really show them to you now because they're on the slides. So the idea is FunFS caches everything very aggressively, both the read data and all the metadata. So we will see the same test twice over FunFS, and the second time should be a lot faster than the first time.
So what we see is our first find even takes here 1.7 seconds compared to the 4 or 5 seconds we were taking with NFS. And when we do it a second time, if my laptop doesn't do graphic glitches, it takes 0.15 seconds. Because it's got a cache of everything there, so it's just doing it locally.
So it's 4 times better and then another 10 times better for cache performance. And this is over only a 100 millisecond connection, ping. If we were trying this at home, we had much higher latency. It was taking much longer. The difference was much more dramatic.
So what we did is some sort of, you know, longer test. This is doing time on find in slash lib directory, which has 234 regular files, 64 directories, 60 symlinks. And what you can see, something NFS tends to do is randomly take longer on a second attempt than the first. So what we see is that, you know, 24 seconds for the first read, 31 seconds for the second one. And it takes about 364 transactions to do it. Now, for FunFS, the first time it took 5.3 seconds, and we did 61 round trips. And second time, there were no round trips. It was completely from cache and took almost no time.
Right. The slides after this don't even show the second run because NFS will have exactly the same performance and we will have virtually local performance.
So here, once more, we've got sort of, this is just a find-type F. The trick here is they have to stat the file to, you know, see if it's a file, whereas using negative latency techniques, we're sort of saying, oh, they're looking at this, they'll probably want to stat it. So we're sending it to them so it's already ready. So it takes significantly less time. Once more, with the color LS, we've got sort of stuff being sent in advance. They have 300 transitions. We have 4. So if you have, you know, 100 milliseconds for each round trip, that's going to be a huge difference.
We're cheating here, really. There's a BSD extension that lets you include the type of the file in the DIR entry. And the LS just happens to check that. So if we fill that in, like NFS doesn't, then we get a huge, huge performance increase. But it's about equivalent to a find with where you specify the type explicitly, so it has to stat.
Finally, we're just, you know, catting a 450K file over the file systems, and NFS does do better than we do. Like, they are writing the kernel, they're sending the files, it's pretty much the same. You know, 3.4 seconds versus 3.6 seconds. We've got less transactions, but the timing, they're a little bit faster. But if we, you know, just wrap it in the gzip stream, all of a sudden we're doing it in 2.1 seconds instead.
The second read on the same file would give you equivalent performance because, well, equivalent and very, very fast performance because both would be cached in kernel space. So we and NFS would do about the same. If the file was very, very large, then NFS, it couldn't possibly fit in the page cache. So NFS would take a lot longer than us because we have it cached on disk as well as in page cache.
All right, so current state. We're sort of mostly proof of concept-y. It's working pretty well, but there's a lot of stuff that would have to be rewritten, redone, changed before we go fully. It's read-only only. There's no write support as yet. And disconnected mode, as you can see, works pretty well. They had some random font issue, which I've never seen before, but you can, you know, unplug, plug in. Everything keeps working that's been working. Now, we have a few things that are currently in progress. One of them is these sort of cache invalidation. Now, we used to have this working using FAM, but the problem with FAM is that the interface is really horrible. You have to register for each file or each directory. There's no way to recursively add stuff. And also, FAM, if it's not in the kernel space, is really sucky. It uses polling if you don't have the kernel support. And for the 2.4 kernel, at least, to use FAM, you need a kernel patch, not just a kernel module. So this is pretty awful, and as such, we sort of ripped that out, and we've been moving to using Dezuko, which will be mentioned in a second. The other thing is the cache invalidation. The lazy cache inspiration I talked about is not really there yet, but it could be added pretty easily.
Right. Dezuko is what we're hoping to use to replace FAM. It's a kernel module that was originally developed for virus scanners and the like. It lets you see any, it notifies you of any file system operations that are happening, and it is even possible to audit them and to say which ones are allowed and which ones are not. We don't really need that functionality, but the real-time notification is really useful. Unfortunately, it currently does not provide all the hooks that we need, so we're working on it. We'll need to add some functionality to it, but it looks like it'll work pretty well for our situation. So obviously, the big thing that needs to be done is write support, and not just any old write support. We want to like our read caching is very, very good, we want to have very efficient write caching as well. We can do this using oplocks. Oplocks are an extension that was added to Linux kernel and a bunch of other kernels, mostly because of Samba. It is basically a mechanism that lets you enforce mandatory locking. So what you can do is you can oplock a file and then allow the client to have outstanding write cache for that file. Then if any application goes to access that file, it is out of date because the client has changed it, but it's not up to date on the server. So you can actually block that application and request the client to flush the write cache before you allow the application to proceed. This way we have very efficient and very, very safe write caching. Long-term plans also include disconnected write support, so while you're in disconnected mode, any changes you make would be logged and then reintegrated to the server when you reconnect. Of course, this would require some sort of a sane conflict resolution algorithm. That's long-term plans. We haven't even started on that.
And remember, FunFS is completely organic and has not been tested on animals. And feel free to clap now. Don't want that for the session. Now they're charging us to steal the second microphone for questions. I see one there.
Mute.
So this looks pretty spiffy. It looks like your goals and your implementation choices are very similar to those of Coda, at least the base level stuff. I was wondering if you'd looked at Coda and what you thought of it. I mean, my experience is it's kind of a pain in the ass, but
We have looked at Coda and we've looked at a lot of file systems, and our basic response to any question about, you know, how do you compare to this, how do you compare to that, is we're really happy to look at any of them and to take the good ideas from them and apply them to FunFS. But the thing is, we haven't found any file system that does everything we want satisfactorily. If you find one that's absolutely amazing and everything, great. Forget this project. I'll use something that's made. I'm a lazy person, too. But right now, you know, we like to sort of take the good ideas from everyone else and put them together in one place.
And we're looking for feedback, features you like from other file systems. If you know of examples of something that is implemented really well, by all means, let us know. We will try to incorporate it into
our
file system.
Send us email, whatever. Suggestions are great.
We're looking for feedback, good things, bad things, to do, not to do, etc.
You had mentioned one of the issues you have with NFS is you stat something and your network connection is gone and it just stops because you're blocking on the kernel stat call. So with this, just so I understand, you'd get back the we're in disconnected mode now because I can't talk to it, and so the operation just fails quickly? Or
Right now, if you kill the daemon, then obviously it'll detect the disconnect right away. Because of TCP issues, we're sort of using a tick, a heartbeat that tells us when you're losing connection. So it takes, you know, a few seconds to time out, or it's a configurable option. But once it's timed out, then it'll just immediately return transport not connected.
If it's not cached. If it is cached, it'll serve you the cached version, and then you're all good. You won't even notice.
Yeah. You had your test for a large file transfer using NFS. Oh, I'm over here.
Yep.
Using NFS and FunFS, and FunFS was a little bit slower, but FunFS is doing read-ahead, so I would have expected it to be faster.
Well, both are doing read-ahead, both NFS and FunFS.
Okay.
The random slowness, the file is pretty small, and the time is only about 3 seconds. It's probably, we can attribute that to random network fluctuations.
Yep.
If we did this several times or used a bigger file, we would get equivalent performance because there's really not much you can optimize for reads. Other than compression. And read ahead, it works well. We both have it.
And another one for you. When you did your cat video and then you disconnected the server, it played through the entire cat video, even though you had only accessed maybe 2 seconds worth.
That kind
of suggested to me that you were caching the whole file, but then later you said read ahead was block-based. So how is caching done?
Actually, one of the issues we had with Coda is that it always caches the whole file rather than chunks of it. The credit for the smooth performance of that video actually goes to MPlayer rather than us, because it actually buffers the file, and there's enough of it so that you don't even see the slight delay caused by the timeout before we detect it,
We were actually, last night when we were trying this out, we sort of, you know, unplugged it right away. It's like, let's see what happens when you unplug it right away so it fails. And then it didn't, and we were a little bit confused until we realized that MPlayer does this massive buffering on us. So if you did just have a partial file, it would fail partway through the read. We tried pulling the plug before it even got started, and then partway through it would just sort of stop.
So what I'm wondering about is with the caching. I mean, let's say that a program does a read on a file, and you had a timeout, but the file was cached, and they go ahead and read it. But then later, you reestablish the connection and discover that in that time, the file has changed.
Right.
So what do you do in that situation?
Right. When we reconnect, we do not immediately throw out all of the cache. Instead, we mark it as invalid. So, well, not invalid, as out of date. So what happens is, if you're in connected mode, you will always read stuff from the server rather than out of date information. If you are in disconnected mode, it will actually serve you out of date information. But when you are connected, you do get notifications from the server. So when you're connected, regardless of what happens, you're guaranteed that you will have up-to-date information.
But if you're asking about the fact that we just served invalid information, that's fine. Invalid information, you know, out of date, is better than nothing. Like, would you rather sit there and be able to do absolutely nothing or say, oh, this is a bit old, whatever?
I guess the question is, does the user know that they got invalid?
The user doesn't know that they got invalid information.
You can check the status of your file system. If it's in disconnected mode, then you might have an out of date information. If you are in connected mode, you're guaranteed that it's fresh.
So I had a question about you. The advantage of not blocking is that you don't sit there forever. But the advantage of blocking is that the failure mode that you create by returning that error is not something that's standard for applications to deal with. So where I understand it's not really your problem if an application doesn't deal with that failure mode well, but there's the practical issue that a lot of people are using applications which may not. And I don't know if you've had any experience with how various applications deal with your error message that it can't read any more of the file that it was just reading.
I know most applications don't check the return code of read. Like, I know I've written applications where I don't check the return code of read and just sort of expect the data to be good. But the few things that we've tried sort of pulling the plug in the middle of have responded reasonably. Like, they've stopped loading an application or stopped playing a video or done something that would be expected and handled. And if they don't, well, I guess... That's, you know, up to the application developer. They're going to get the return code that says it's disconnected.
I asked you about practical, what you've seen.
From what we tried, most applications fail gracefully or just crash. It's really up to the application. The error code that's returned is actually a standard error code, transport not connected. So theoretically, it's there for being used for things like this. You need more or less graceful applications for this to work. It is possible to implement a blocking mode in this scenario as well. If you'd prefer that, if you think that's more reasonable, we can make an option to do that. No problem.
I guess what I forgot to mention earlier is that basically what we have here is a framework. There's a lot of stuff that works, but what do you want to do for the specifics, for the caching, for the authentication, for everything, can be easily applied within the stateful protocol, within the user space file system. You can do pretty much what you want with it. Right now we've got the core functionality that's sort of sitting there.
Like, it's for example, it's going to serve as basis for nunspace. It's not really, think of it as a library file system in some ways. You can do whatever you want with it. Easily extensible.
So if I understand you correctly, the server informs all of its clients when files are changing that it knows those clients have in their caches, right? So you can decide when to use the cache and when you need a fresh read. Doesn't that create a lot of state on the server? Do you have metrics about that, and how do you manage it?
We have sort of limited resources, so we couldn't do a really large-scale test of this, but it seems to perform reasonably well, especially considering the fact that you only have notifications for files that you've accessed within this section, within this session. So if that does become a performance bottleneck, we can implement a message from the server that will tell the client that a particular file is no longer being monitored, and then the client will mark it as out of date but still maybe valid kind of thing. Same thing as what happens when you disconnect.
You know, say you're looking at a whole lot of little files and a couple of huge videos, and the thing's saying, oh, I'm running in memory, I'm caching all the stuff that they know. It's like, well, we're not monitoring these files anymore. You can send it a message and keep the big stuff in cache just because that's something you really want to know if it changes or not, because it's large to download again.
Have you looked at, besides pipelining, have you looked on the protocol level at reordering results so they don't return the same order that you request them, or even full-fledged multiplexing?
Well, this is kind of there because the server keeps track of the information the client has, so it will never pre-send information that the client already has, kind of thing. And as for multiplexing, we have considered using multiple streams, particularly because the read chunk is relatively large, so we're concerned that maybe there will be some problems with it drowning out smaller requests. So we might eventually do some sort of multiplexing or maybe even multiple connections with prioritization for different operations.
If you have, you know, a metadata stream, then you won't block on your LS just because you're playing a video and it's sending all these data blocks for that.
Have you thought of making a mode for FunFS where it will never go into disconnected operations so that users are guaranteed consistency? Where it will simply fail rather than go into disconnected?
Of course, that's very easy to do. You can make it behave like NFS and block forever, like was mentioned earlier. Not a problem. It's much harder to do the opposite, right?
It might not matter so much till you have write mode, but do you have a command that lets you say, okay, please cache this directory recursively. I know I'm going to disconnect my laptop. I want to have that, rather than just waiting till it seems like that might be very useful.
We don't yet, but it should be possible to interact with the client, and because it's in user space, you can just send it messages, whatever. It can have a socket that it listens to. You could communicate with it and give it hints about the caching, etc. It's not done, but it's quite possible.
Okay, and we have time for two more questions.
This is sort of a larger scope than you're trying to address, but one thing that I've recently become very disappointed with is the fact that everybody seems to be using things like DB as a file system instead of using the file system to store data. And the reason why they do this is because there's no begin and end transaction system calls. And so they feel compelled to use DB in order to get transactional behavior out of their file system. Do you have any idea about addressing this problem?
One thing I've sort of been reading, it's not completely related, but basically, you know, at first hard drives are small data, you can quickly seek to whatever. Hard drive is looked at as, you know, random access media. But now because drives are getting so large, you've got so much data, pretty high throughput, but the act of getting from place to place is pretty bad. We're at a lot of, you know, high-end supercomputing is starting to look at a hard drive, not as so much a hard drive, but as like a sequential thing you have to devise. And then you're sort of looking at whole new modes of writing to the data and reading data that, you know, sort of databasing and indexing and going place sequential data becomes really important. We haven't looked at any of this, but there's sort of a lot of craziness that could be done and that random people are doing.
Do you have any plans for removing the single server point of failure, like distributing operations so that you could have a failover load distribution and such?
Well, of course, none space. Right? It's not there. It's an idea that one of the guys at NetIntegration Technologies had. It's going to be built on top of FunFS. It will be massively distributed and completely decentralized. And, well, of course, failure resistant. And it'll do many things, but I don't know how yet.
So anyone who wants to make Nunspace, feel free and do our job for us.
Okay, thank you.